Telephonobia, got that telephonobia. Telephonobia? Yeah, telephonobia. Got that telephonobia. 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 Got that telephonobia? Yeah, that's me. Alfred DaCosta, your host of the L4H podcast. What are you living for today? This website that I'm looking at, it says, dear introvert, I guess, why introverts absolutely loathe talking on the phone. And this term called telephonobia is simply the intense fear of talking on the phone. And it's a real thing. I mean, it seems like you could make phobia out of anything. And a big group that hates it the most are, they say they associate it with the millennials. And so you'll notice even more nowadays, people go for the texting. And I think a lot of the reason why people are so offended by it is because it demands your attention right now. And it requires you to switch gears quickly. And it's alarming, you know, like an alarm clock or a crying baby. If it's not with a friend that you care about in a special way, it could have a lot of small talk. Personally, for me, I'm just not a good multitasker. I'm usually working from a schedule, and so I like texting. If I am going to talk on the phone, I usually like it to be scheduled. Personally, I'm a listener. I like to listen, and that's why people think I'm a good listener. In fact, they know it. And it's not because I just sit there quietly. I'm actually an active listener. And so when you're on the phone, there's no body language. You know, when I'm sitting there quietly, I'm usually looking in your eyes and I'm nodding and I'm repeating the last part of the sentence or the phrase that you might have said to let you know, A, I'm engaged, and B, the parts that just resonate with me. On a phone, you could be anywhere. And if you're not matching their enthusiasm, they'll think you're not listening. It's automatically assumed. Oh, there must be something wrong with you. And so you can't have those awkward pauses that you would usually have when you're face to face. And so I'm going to agree with this article. I'm going to agree with how terrible a telephone call is. And so here's a song about it. I used to love the telephone when it hung on a wall. When I needed to talk to my girlfriend, she would give me a call. Now we get notifications, that vibration in my pocket, obligated to respond to that social media rocket. You got something that I need. Yeah, I need. Ooh, ooh. So I got like 2 phone calls, and one of the reasons that I did not answer is because today is my day off, and I have a hard time keeping that sacred, because I believe that the person who is calling and their cause has the potential of outweighing my needs and my feelings. For example, if my mother calls, I mean, that's the mother card that trumps everything. And then, you know, this gentleman, he is a pastor who is actually dealing with bereavement right now, grief. And that is a moral obligation from my perspective to at least see what's going on with him and why he called, especially during such a difficult time. With that, then I end up answering the call, addressing the crisis, ending up where I began all over again. The thing that's unfortunate with me is that I'll find out that something has to be done about it. Like, there's got to be other people in the world who can handle this. It can't necessarily be only me. And so that's already, in my estimation, some kind of narcissism to believe that I need to respond because I'm the only one in the world with what it takes to address the issue. I must think in my head that the world will not go on without me if something were to happen. So it's up to me. So I'm here to save the universe with a cape in the back. Got an eye on my chest, stands for indispensable snack. The problems of this world won't save themselves unless I become a super telephony Kenobi, one on crack. So that's the trouble with the combination of ministry, altruism, and this sense of duty that I commit myself to. Yet at the same time, when I show up, I always witness the power of God. I'll give you an example. The lock-in this last weekend, I hadn't stayed up all night I can't even remember. I ended up having a platform that I would have never imagined. There were people that showed up that were from the youth and young adult age bracket that I had been trying to contact and get a hold of, get in touch with, and connect with, that now I had this stage where we were doing this interactive ministry, hanging out. I was even able to deliver the gospel to a young lady who was getting it from TikTok. It's these little windows of opportunity that I cannot deny. I make sure to show up. At the same time, I have need of taking a break, relaxing. I don't do that very well. One of the examples are tomorrow. It's going to be commodities, and I'm always happy to help them, today, and it was good. But now, because of fear that I know that no one is going to go tomorrow, I feel like that I should go. I don't want those ladies stuck doing that. And I'll end up going and feeling resentful because my schedule is passively, indirectly considered indispensable, and no one's going to stand up for my day off. No one's going to fight for me to take a break and a breath to fill my cup. And furthermore, the type of person that I am is, I don't think that a break should be longer than 15 minutes. So I'll get a respite, a breath in, and then I'll personally violate my own boundaries and just fiddle with work. And this is still all wrong. Don't have anything to give. I'm taxed like W-2, bound to catch a break if I would follow through. Respect my own boundaries to relax and renew between the things I spend my time doing, the things that I do. So I'm reading this book called Daring Greatly, and when I get into moods like this, I know it has something to do with having my cup empty, but I never know how to fill it up. I spend time with God, and I do talk to my wife. I wonder if I need to go to therapy. Whatever it is, I always end up looking for books, and I found this one called Daring Greatly, if I'm not mistaken. And I don't know if you've read it, but I love one of the things she talks about. Is this, and I'm sure I'm saying it wrong, Gremlin Ninja Warrior. And it has to do with this phrase she calls shame resilience. And she has kind of like this thing she goes through. Because shame, whether you're male or female, is something we all experience and we all respond to it differently. And she kind of talks about the difference between shame and guilt. I guess guilt is something you did bad. Shame is saying I am bad. And in this gremlin ninja warrior thing, the gremlin part of it being the shame, shame doesn't like language. But when you give it language, you almost cut it off at the legs, is what the author describes. And so there's a lot more to it. You'll have to read it for yourself. But I mean, one of the things I looked for is the practical application, what she does. And so she tells of this story where someone offended her, sent an email, and she meant to forward it to her husband. She put a bunch of stuff in it, along with two expletives along the line of horse and his fecal matter, but she ended up sending it to the guy, and the guy got it, and he was like, I knew it. I knew that you were a nobody, a poser. You know, she has this big platform talking about vulnerability. So what's the first thing? I mean, even you listening to that right there, you know already that it kind of takes the breath out of you. What do you do next? And so she just went through this process. And you know, you get this tunnel vision she describes. But she started saying this thing that her friend taught her to say, is that you kind of get out of your head by saying something out loud. And she says, pain, 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 because it hurts. I don't know what it is about shame, but it is physically debilitating. And so she's saying that first, but then she changes her self-talk, because you know, sometimes we talk to ourselves worse than our worst enemy, and we would never talk to our loved ones that way, but we sure do, you know, call ourselves names and expletives and maybe even beat ourselves up pretty bad. And so the one thing I really like that she says is that you can run away from those situations, or you can own your story so that you have the power to write your own ending to it. Or it just ends up being something that is attached to you. And so she ends up going to her safe circle and getting, you know, empathy from her friends and support. And she decides she was going to write the person back, and she does. And the person never responded again. So she ended up owning it, but then drawing boundaries and moving on. The thing about The Secret of Shame is that it keeps secrets. And it was very pivotal to me when she said, a person who survives abuse, and you, listener, may have survived abuse, whether it's mental, physical, spiritual, I don't know, whatever. And you learn to keep things secret. And that's something that I'm just barely getting out of as an adult. But there's parts of my past that I've never talked about and given voice, that I've never given voice to, because that would cause me to be vulnerable. And so I don't really want to do that. One of the things also that she talks about is emotional creative writing. And that's kind of what this was. That's kind of what this podcast is tonight. It's kind of an experiment with the music in between and just real honest feelings about things that are coming up. And so I encourage you to give it a try and see if that helps you. But especially if you're a male, you know what shame is. And we're taught to just have the appearance of, I got it together. And then with women, goodness gracious, you should hear how bad it is for women. There's a lot of outdated framework that we thought was gone, you know, like the expectations of your looks, of not being too loud because you'd be ratchet, or being too quiet, or being, you want to be sexually appealing, but you don't want to be too big. You want to be, and when you see a woman rise up like this woman, Renee, and speak on a platform like TED Talk, and you scroll down to the comments and see people frame you and categorize you and make comments about your looks and your size, your shape, and, you know, like, it's just really bad. And so I am on a journey of sorts. I have plans of trying this vulnerability thing and see where it takes me. Vulnerability is your chance to shine. Cut shame off at the legs. Show up at the scene of the crime. You're not defined by the mistakes that you make. Cast your cares on Jesus Christ, connected to the vine.